The most common New Year's resolutions are always to get in shape and lose weight. But maybe it's so common because every year we have to resolve to trim down again. This is Florida Matters. From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sussingham. Take a look at some of the plethora of keto cookbooks on Amazon. Quick and Easy Ketogenic Cooking, Southern Keto, Ketogenic Cleanse, Keto Comfort Foods. It's fair to say this is a diet craze, but does it really work? We're talking to Dom D'Agostino, Associate Professor of Molecular Pharmacology and Physiology at the University of South Florida and widely known keto expert. His colleague Angela Poff, also with USF's Department of Molecular Pharmacology, she's a research associate studying non-toxic metabolic targeted therapies for cancer and neurological diseases. And Jenna Bell, registered dietitian, triathlete, nutrition advisor, senior vice president at Pollock Communications. Thanks so much, y'all, for being here.
We appreciate being here. Thank you.
So, full disclosure, I started a ketogenic diet about a month ago.
Okay.
What I call a ketogenic-ish diet. I'm trying. And I went to the grocery store the first day to buy coconut cream and natural unsweetened peanut butter and all this weird stuff that I do not have at home. And I was putting it up on the thing, and I see the woman behind me putting up ketogenic bars. You know, I said, "Are you on the keto diet?" She said, "Yes, I lost 30 pounds in 3 months." And then the cashier, 19-year-old boy, says, "I'm on the keto diet." This is crazy. You know, in my little line, all three of us are starting this. So, Dom, first, just describe a little bit of the theory behind it, briefly, if you can.
Ketogenic diet is essentially shifting your body's metabolism from a carbohydrate burning metabolism, so glucose would be your primary fuel, to a fatty acid and ketone metabolism.
So you are trying to limit your sugar intake drastically, your carbohydrate intake drastically compared to what your normal diet is, so that your body starts burning your fat instead of glucose for energy?
You start eating yourself instead of, you always have a baseline glucose. There's very powerful homeostatic mechanisms that maintain your blood glucose, and that doesn't go down much. But what does go down is the big spikes in glucose. So the suppression of the hormone insulin is what happens when you follow the diet. And by suppressing that hormone insulin, that liberates more fat for fuel for your body. And fat burning in the liver produces these things called ketone bodies, and they can largely replace glucose as the primary energy source for your brain. So over time, you are essentially resilient against hypoglycemic dips during the day, which would trigger cravings.
So just putting it in lay terms, I would get panicky. Like if I don't eat, I mean, it is really almost a panicky feeling. I think your blood sugar must be very low.
It's a crisis situation.
It is. Yeah. And if I didn't have some kind of like granola bar or something in my purse or in my glove compartment, you feel like I don't think I'm going to make it to the McDonald's or whatever, wherever you're going. But is that what you're talking about? You don't get those kind of spikes where you feel like you have to eat something right now.
Yes.
Then.
It doesn't completely abolish that, but it basically ensures that you have steady fuel flow to the brain. And I would argue that that's almost a natural state. We would ease in and out of ketosis depending on food availability, like our ancestors did. So to completely silence that through eating carbohydrate meals throughout the day, that is a bit unnatural.
Right. So that's the theory behind the idea of this ketogenic diet. But Angela, haven't you seen this just take off in recent years?
Yes.
What do you think caused that, sparked this craze now?
Oh, that's a really great question. It's been interesting, you know, kind of watching it, I think, from our perspective. I've been working with Dom here at USF for going on a decade.
Wow, about a decade.
Kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because, you know, when we started, it was something that really wasn't a mainstream word. I mean, no one really knew about it. And now, like you mentioned, it's literally everywhere. Everyone's talking about it.
Was there a particular celebrity that started that maybe?
You know, actually, Dr. D'Agostino, Dom here, actually was one of the really early scientists in the ketogenic space that started kind of speaking on a more, you know, mainstream platform to talk about the science that we're doing and the work that has been done. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the interest has come from, unfortunately, a lot of individuals individuals have tried perpetually to, you know, alter their diet and lose weight and get healthier and see themselves failing at that endeavor every year and maybe are interested in just learning about a different option.
Jenna Bell, you're a dietitian. When you glance through the reviews of the keto diet cookbooks, the keto diet books, and you see it referred to as a lifestyle more than a diet, what are they talking about?
It becomes a lifestyle, and it's something that we've seen, too, as you're watching the growth from the scientific community. Paula Communications, we work with Today's Dietitian to do a survey of dietitians every year. And the ketogenic diet was not even on the trends list 7 years ago. So we asked them, what's trending in nutrition? What are you hearing from consumers and patients? 7 years ago, it didn't even make the list. A couple years ago, it appeared. And this year, it's number one. So we've got ketogenic diet, plant-based, and the third is now intermittent fasting, which is similar to what you were talking about as well. And I think we've learned that cell turnover might not be what we want to be so aggressive about. We don't want to be feeding all of the time. The three square meals, that's gone. Surveys show that snacks are what people are doing, and a lot of that's driven by millennials. So millennials are choosing health, wanting to get healthier, owning it more than previous generations, and then also snacking throughout the day. So maybe paying more attention to their hunger, but then also enjoying smaller bouts of food throughout the day.
Let me ask you something about that survey. They surveyed hundreds and hundreds of people, over 1,000 people.
Yeah, this year we had close to 2,000 dietitians respond.
Number one trend is the keto diet. Number two is plant-based eating. Mm-hmm. What I wanted to ask you was, how does the plant-based eating fit in with keto? Now, keto is all about meat and fat. So is it harder for vegetarians to be on the keto diet?
Yeah, isn't it interesting? Because, well, the ketotarian diet, that's interesting. So the ketotarian diet is looking at it, how can we achieve ketosis but emphasize our fats from plant-based sources and avoid, I think that early on, the keto diet for weight loss was a salami and cheese diet. But now it's not necessarily that. So there's books written now and talk more about how do you get more olives, how do you include avocado in different recipes rather than just emphasizing meat. So plant-based and clean eating are the two things that kind of like intersect this intermittent fasting and keto craze and this, you know, the excitement for ketogenic eating. And actually, Forbes magazine said that vegan is the diet of the year. Like 2019 will be the year of vegan.
Not for me.
And that's, well, and it's interesting, right? Because a lot of foods, even still, don't want to talk about that a recipe is vegan or vegetarian. I have a client that's a plant-based food, a commodity food, and they said that we are going to have lots of recipes that are vegetarian, but please don't call them that. So it's interesting how we are contradicting ourselves.
Well, another thing I wanted to bring up from that survey was that in the survey of the food purchase drivers, taste came in at number four,
right?
For food. Taste was number four. Number one was convenience, then healthfulness, then cost, then finally taste.
This is phenomenal. And maybe it's just in the world of nutrition trends where dietitians are hearing from consumers now that healthy is more important to them than how something tastes. It's hard to know what drove that. Certainly, it's the recognition that food is not just functional. Food is like the solution to wellness. I think that's where we're moving now.
So we posted on WUSF's Facebook page saying we were doing this show on dieting and asking for people's experiences. And Chris Cowell wrote, "Here's a radical idea, exercise and eating a well-balanced diet that includes plenty of vegetables." You know, Dom, why can't it just be that simple?
Yeah, and it can be. I think people make diet a little more complicated than it needs to be. It really depends on the demographic. So we talked about taste being a driver in number four, but I think taste may be a number one driver for a fairly large demographic of people who just reach for things that look good. But there is definitely a shift towards using nutrition for wellness. And when it comes to, I guess, weight loss is the big thing. You know, many people can lose weight. The problem is keeping the weight off and sustaining that weight loss over time. So from my perspective, just shifting from a Western diet to a whole foods-based diet that does have fruits and veggies and whole foods instead of processed foods is a step in that direction. And a ketogenic diet is an extreme version of low carb that could also be, it's more of a medical diet that was based for seizure control, but is also a version of the diet that works remarkably well for weight loss and also blood glucose management. So really, I think the guy has a very good suggestion there, but it might not be feasible for everyone in the population, certain demographics, to base their diet off fresh vegetables and fruits. They just may not have access to it, you know.
A couple points there. So the keto diet discourages fruit and a lot of vegetables because they have carbs. Banana, I used to eat a banana every day. What does it have, 35 carbs or something? And that's what you're supposed to eat in a whole day is like 35 carbs. And also, you mentioned demographics. I'm a little frustrated because my husband and I went on this diet at the same time, and he immediately lost 12 pounds, and I am female and lost, if I squint at the scale and look at it just right, I might have lost a pound. Yeah. So I think that men and women are definitely different when it comes to this diet. Angela, have you found that?
You know, I think more than anything, there's just a unique response that any individual will have. Some people do seem to respond very well to the ketogenic diet, but it's not always the case. It's not a blanket, I think, one size fits all thing. And I think, you know, to what Dom was talking about, customizing the diet to something that is doable, sustainable for you individually. And does that mean setting your carbohydrate intake at, you know, 50 net grams of carbohydrate? Are you able to do that and maintain the benefits that you want? Are those improving like you want them to be? Are you meeting your goals? Because some people can have higher carbohydrate intake, especially if you're younger or you're an athlete. A lot of individuals actually that are athletes and doing keto are still actually consuming a fair amount of carbohydrates, especially, like, you know, timed around their exercises. You can incorporate a fair amount of vegetables. It might not be the whole plethora of vegetables that you're choosing from. You might be doing a lot of, you know, leafy green, high fiber vegetables, more berries as opposed to bananas. But I think it's something that is quite customizable and people can find what works for them.
I guess once you get used to it, it gets easier. And Angela, you've done research on breast cancer, right? And the ketogenic diet?
Yes. So actually most of the work that we've done with cancer is with brain cancer. We are doing a study currently on a breast cancer model, but ketogenic diet as a potential adjuvant for cancer therapy is actually a really hot topic. And there's definitely a lot of really encouraging preliminary work suggesting that there might be a nice place for this.
Okay, so the idea is that glucose feeds tumors. Is that it? And then cutting back on the... Is that
and
simple?
Insulin.
I know that's simple, but...
Yeah, insulin's a major driver. So if our insulin levels are high, pretty much all the major drivers of cancer growth and proliferation are linked to insulin signaling. So that's a very promising area of research, is using this diet to sensitize tumors so that other forms of therapy can work.
I'm Robin Sessingham, and you're listening to Florida Matters. We're taking a short break, and we'll be right back. This is Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sessingham, and we're talking about how to meet your New Year resolution to lose weight. I'm here in the studio with Dom D'Agostino, Associate Professor of Molecular Pharmacology and Physiology at the University of South Florida and a widely known keto expert, Angela Poff, a Research Associate with USF's Department of Molecular Pharmacology, and Jenna Bell, a Registered Dietitian and Senior Vice President at Pollock Communications. Jenna, people often fail to keep their resolutions because they create a goal of weight loss, but they don't create an action plan to get there.
I think that that's part of it, is having, I think that if you want to build a house, you want to make sure that you have the tools to do so. And actually, there's a lot of things available to us now. So registered dietitians throughout the years have always recommended a food journal. It's still considered a great tool to have a diary where you can actually, like, observe what you're consuming. Now we have apps. These tools are simple, but it is really helpful to have something prepared. I think the other part in setting a goal, however, is we so often set a goal to quit something, and without proper replacement, quitting is awful. Quitting can be awesome, actually. You know, I've actually, I signed up for an Ironman that I didn't do, and it, I felt awesome not doing it.
You know, so
I felt like a really
too.
Good quitter. But having positive behavior. So instead of saying, what do I want to cut out or what do I not want, I want to lose weight, say, this is what I want to add to my life. It's like when people are looking at smoking cessation. Pick something that you add, because disease prevention is really not going to get you there. I'm adding more time. I have less of this to worry about. You know, so looking at how can we make this an improvement rather than a punishment.
Mm-hmm. We really haven't had the ketogenic diet around. You said 7 years ago, it wasn't even on this list of hot topics.
Yes, dietitians weren't hearing their consumers talk about it.
So what I'm wondering, Dom, is has it been around long enough to look at long-term effects, especially a strict ketogenic diet where you're not eating a lot of fruit and vegetables?
It's a good question, and I think it needs to be carefully examined, the long-term effects of the diet. I mean, we do know the Mayo Clinic worked and established this diet in the early 1920s, and it was the standard of care for epilepsy until drugs came along. And then it was revived by Jim Abrams of the Charlie Foundation, Hollywood producer, and then Meryl Streep did a movie about the ketogenic diet. It was called First Do No Harm. Many people don't know that Meryl Streep was an advocate of the diet and did a movie about it. And then people started following it. Johns Hopkins started putting a lot of patients on it. And we have records of those patients over decades. Generally speaking, all biomarkers go in the right direction. So hemoglobin A1C goes down. Our inflammatory markers go down, which is a good thing. And insulin, too, goes down. And HDL, our good cholesterol, tends to go up a little bit. One biomarker that is of a concern to a lot of people is LDL cholesterol. There, the subfraction of LDL, the larger, more fluffy molecule, tends to be the one that's predominantly elevated in people who are on these high-fat, low-carb diets. And doctors tend to worry about the elevation of LDL. But in the context of other biomarkers going in the right direction, I don't think there's as much of a concern that there needs to be.
So they haven't looked at the rate of heart attack or stroke? Has there been any alarm bells that have gone off?
Not with the clinically implemented ketogenic diet, which helps a lot of patients. Mm-hmm. There is data by several groups looking at people who were obese and type 2 diabetic to begin with. And because the ketogenic diet allowed them to lose weight and maintain that weight loss or regulate their blood glucose, their outcomes are more positive. But if you take an everyday healthy person who's athletic and then follows a ketogenic diet, that's a new scenario that really didn't exist before.
Jenna, as a dietitian, what do you think people should be cautious about going into something like this?
Well, I think it's always important to obviously talk to your healthcare professionals. You know, it's always important to keep your doctor up to date. I think that seeking guidance from a registered dietitian is extremely helpful. Doing, you know, self-study makes a lot of sense, too, because, again, it gives you that sense of control. But we can't all be expected to become experts. It's interesting, right, that we expect for everyone to be experts in nutrition. But yet, if something goes wrong with my plumbing, nobody expects me to know what to do with it. And I mean in my house. That was a dietitian joke there. But anyhow, you know, I think that we need to figure out what our goals are. And I think of the ketogenic diet or any extreme weight loss diet that is a huge shift in what you're currently doing is you have an issue of harm reduction that you're trying to address. So is your blood glucose been diagnosed as high at rest? Do you have a blood pressure issue? Is it a lipid profile imbalance that you're dealing with? Are you overweight in a way that's actually going to affect your health? And then looking at which diets or lowering your intake. You know, people always ask me that there's got to be a right and wrong. And whether you like it or not, there are a million different diets to be healthy on. So it's kind of like what Dom and Angela were saying. You do have to have some individuality here. And so if you decide to take on a keto diet, you want to make sure that you're eating, you know, sufficient calories. You want to make sure you have sufficient food intake so that you are meeting your nutrient needs. That's where a dietitian can be very helpful. You don't want to slip into that fear of eating so that you don't eat enough and then you do find yourself fatigued or suffering from what happens if you have insufficient protein intake and, you know, all of a sudden your hair is looking ratty and you can't maintain muscle and you keep falling asleep. It sounds exhausting, all of the individual factors that you have to consider, but think of it as like a next step in understanding, you know, how your body functions.
Don't go crazy.
Yeah.
But when you see the weight falling off, it is really encouraging. And I don't understand the difference. Like, Dom, talk about how you eat, because it's not just the ketogenic diet. It is this intermittent fasting that's also so popular now. In other words, don't feel like you have to eat breakfast because it's breakfast time. Mm-hmm. Think about whether you really are hungry.
Yeah. So I didn't have my first meal until 1 p.m. and I had a salad. I tend to eat more vegetables on a ketogenic diet than I did on a regular Western kind of diet. And I had grass-fed beef. And so I tend to be a little more mindful about the types of foods that I'm putting into my body as far as the types of meat and the types of fish. And I feel that if the nutrition content of the food that I'm eating is high, that tends to signal my body that it's actually in a fed state. And I also feel no doubt that a higher fat meal has a satiating effect. So you can decrease meal frequency, and that becomes very liberating. So I'm not hungry. So if I'm doing something, working on a paper or grant, where I don't want to take my mental focus off of that particular task, I don't have to take time out of my day to prepare food, to eat the food, to clean up after. That's a good hour.
Well, you're very disciplined. And one thing I wanted to ask you, the whole point of the ketogenic diet is to put your body into ketosis, where you're producing ketones, right? And these can be measured. They sell these strips that you can, I guess, in your urine
yeah,
or something.
Yeah,
you
can tell. Or blood.
But what about just taking ketone supplements and then not worrying so much about cutting your carbs and doing all that hard part? What about just taking more ketones? Can you get there that way?
Yeah. Well, so that's actually something that we study in the lab, and we call them exogenous ketones. So the word exogenous means from outside. And, you know, the reason that these actually were developed is because over the past, you know, decade or so, we've begun to realize that these ketone molecules themselves actually have many benefits associated with them. So they're definitely a lot more than just a energy molecule that provides energy. They actually have signaling properties. So they, for example, interact directly with our DNA to alter gene expression. This is actually an aspect of something that's being studied as why ketosis may impact cancer, for example, because you can literally alter the genes that are being expressed. And as we know, gene expression changes is a big issue in cancer.
Wow.
They also directly interact with other proteins within our cells and in our blood to suppress inflammation. I would say importantly, as we age, research shows that our brains become less efficient at burning glucose for energy. So there's actually a lot of research in humans done by a colleague of ours, Dr. Stephen Cunane. And he has shown that in the aging brain, and this is true to an even greater extent in early stage dementias or, for example, Alzheimer's disease, the brain becomes less and less capable of normal glucose uptake and metabolism, but seems to retain its capabilities of normally metabolizing ketones.
So let me ask you, can we take it as a supplement right now? Can we go into the drugstore and get ketones? What's it called?
Yeah, I think there's a couple on the market. Ketogenics is one. KetoLogic, there's a company called Prove It, and they make ketone supplements.
Jenna,
how can consumers know it's working?
So the good thing about the ketone supplements on the market is that there are commercially available blood ketone meters that you can get at any Walgreens or CVS that measure beta-hydroxybutyrate ketone bodies to confirm that you are indeed getting a product that has the active ingredient in it. I don't know of any supplements on the market right now where you can get a commercially available kit and for a few bucks actually measure your blood to determine the levels in it. I think that's a very unique supplement in that way.
And it sounds like something that people wouldn't want to do, but you would be surprised.
Oh, yeah, a finger prick, like a blood glucose.
The keto community, they're kind of all about it. So people are
pricking
their fingers all over the place. And
yeah, like a diabetic does.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You don't feel, it's a very small finger prick and one drop of blood, and you put it on a little stick that goes into the meter. The same meter that measures glucose can measure ketones, and you can validate whether or not your ketone supplement is legitimate. But we have ones that we tested on ketonutrition.org. We don't sell any ketone supplements, but we like to promote the ones that we think are efficacious.
Let me ask you about that. So you have that website, ketonutrition.org, and when I clicked on it, I did see ads How does that work? Because it seems like
partners.
It could be a conflict of interest in your research.
Absolutely,
and then,
it could be. Yeah. I work with a team almost weekly, if not daily sometimes, on conflict of interest stuff because the University of South Florida has various patents on ketone technologies. And although I do not own the patents, the university owns them, I am an inventor on them. And when someone purchases a product like Ketogenix, a portion of the sales actually go to the university and the inventor gets some too. That is a conflict of interest. I like to donate the funds back to the university so we can use the funds from those products to drive research.
When we're talking about food almost as medicine, doesn't it kind of take some of the romance out of eating? I mean, it's almost like having sex because you didn't get to the gym that day. I mean, it sort of takes a little bit of romance out of it.
Spouse
trying
that. I get it. Yeah.
What do you think about that?
You know, I don't think it takes all the romance out. I think it makes it part of your lifestyle. You know, I've done a lot of work with fitness professionals and they genuinely have a good time with it. And so while we might, it used to be, remember, it was like the boiled chicken. They just had a box of boiled chicken with them. So now there's a little bit more creativity. And I think that the population now, even the Gen Xers like me, we're working out at a different kind of level now. We're athletes in sports that we may have never even tried. I work out with a whole bunch of really fit people at the body shop in St. Petersburg. And they look for small changes. And so it doesn't take it all of the Julia Childs out of it necessarily. And they, you know, it sparks fun conversation and, oh, did you try this new kind of breakfast or, you know, what are you eating? And so it's actually something that we've turned into something that might bring us together.
A different kind of enjoyment.
Yeah. I think mindful whole food eating can be and should be pleasurable. I mean, eating should be a source of pleasure. And I think for me, the ketogenic diet is very indulgent because I'm eating things that I avoided for many years, like butter and, you know, the skin on the chicken, fatty cuts of meat. So for me, it's quite an indulgent diet.
Yeah, and I think that actually for a lot of people, switching to a more whole food-based diet or perhaps a ketogenic diet would actually increase the amount of time that they spend probably cooking, preparing whole foods, and that I feel like has a lot of romance to it too, and just being able to spend that time with your family, your loved ones, actually caring about what you are preparing and consuming yourself rather than running by McDonald's after work.
Angela Poff is a research associate with USF's Department of Molecular Pharmacology. We've also been with Dom D'Agostino, an associate professor of molecular pharmacology and physiology at USF and a keto expert, and Jenna Bell, a registered dietitian, a triathlete, and a nutrition advisor. Thank you all so much for being with me.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Florida Matters is now available as a podcast. It's another great way to listen whenever it's convenient for you, and you'll hear a more extensive version of this conversation. Search for it wherever you get your podcasts, or go to our website, wusf.org, and click the Listen tab. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. The engineer is Craig George. The producer is Stephanie Colombini. I'm Robin Sessingham. Thanks for listening.